Welcome to Whiskey Cast, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 457 for December 21st, 2013. Coming up in a few minutes.
I'm very curious, and I wanted also to give the opportunity to more people to be curious as me.
Belgium is full of whiskey lovers, and Etienne Bouillon is trying to satisfy their thirst. He and his partners at the Owl Distillery near Liège have been making single malt whiskey for 9 years now. More on the Owl Distillery later on WhiskeyCast In Depth. I'll also have the calendar of events, this week's Your Voice, and in the What I'm Tasting This Week department, my notes for one of the Owl's most unusual whiskeys. It may well be one of the strongest whiskeys ever. All on this week's WhiskeyCast.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Let's get started with the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. There's been another hiccup in Diageo's deal to buy India's United Spirits Limited. Friday, the High Court in India's state of Karnataka voided Diageo's purchase of USL shares, even though the deal closed back in July. The ruling came in a lawsuit filed by creditors of former United Spirits owner Vijay Mallya's bankrupt Kingfisher Airlines. In a complex series of transactions, Mallya used shares of his United Breweries Holdings beer company to guarantee bank loans for Kingfisher, and United Breweries held shares in United Spirits. Those shares were sold to Diageo as part of the larger deal for a controlling stake in USL, and the Kingfisher creditors persuaded the court to block the entire deal. News reports out of Bangalore say the creditors want United Breweries sold to satisfy their claims from the Kingfisher default. Diageo and Mallya's UB Group have both promised to appeal the ruling to India's Supreme Court. Government regulators had already considered the claims from those creditors when they approved the sale earlier this year. Analysts say the ruling should only have a minor impact on the overall deal. Meanwhile, United Spirits is close to picking an investment banker to vet potential bidders for its White & Mackay unit in Scotland. As I reported several weeks ago, Diageo has offered to sell most of White & Mackay to satisfy UK competition regulators. The Office of Fair Trading is still considering Diageo's proposal to sell the entire White & Mackay unit, except for the Dalmore and Tamnivoolan distilleries and their maturing whiskey stocks, which USL says are essential to its whiskey business in India. It's not known whether the court ruling in Bangalore will have an impact on the potential sale. Now, let's update last week's big story, the controversial Dewar's Meet the Baron online video. It did not take long at all for the Distilled Spirits Council of the United States to react to a complaint filed by Canadian whiskey blogger Joanne McGinnis. As she told us last week, the video's portrayal of women was seen as offensive by many whiskey lovers and violated the Discus Code of Responsible Practices. Monday, the Discus Code Review Board met to review the Dewar's ad and agreed with the critics, in a move that left Joanne McGinnis a bit stunned with its speed.
They don't really give you an idea of what the turnaround time is as far as, you know, how quickly they'll review a case or whatnot. And I honestly believe, like, with Christmas coming and everything's coming to a complete standstill in some cases, that I probably wouldn't hear anything until, sometime in January if I was lucky. But so to have them turn it around in I'm going to say less than a week was quite a surprise. The letter that I got back basically says that yes, you know, the section that you quoted, they were in clear violation. And however, we would like to advise you that, as you already know, that Dewar's, you know, has completely removed the ad and the campaign.
Which, of course, was the whole idea to begin with, but I know you have a further goal of trying to get them to not do this in the future, right?
I think that would be the lesson learned for me is, you know, I don't think they receive any type of penalty for breaking that or for being in violation of it. But I do hope that it'll make them maybe think twice or possibly, you know, have a wider variety of audience look at some of their campaign ads. Because according to the letter they had sent, they had said in their letter to us, to those of us who had written to them, that they had allowed people to see that ad, and the feedback they got from everybody, according to the letter, was that it was favorable, and nobody seemed to be objective or objectable to that particular video and campaign.
Where do you go from here with the protest? I assume things pretty much die down unless something happens in the future?
I think, for me, what's kind of happened, which it's not, it wasn't the way I had thought about it from this perspective, but a lot of people are now sending me information and kind of like, I don't want to say I've become the poster child for advertising, but I'm getting a lot of negative, but as well as positive stuff coming to me. So I'll get an email saying, you know, here's an ad that's done right, or here's an ad that I think is done tastefully. But I also get the, you know, well, here, what do you think of this one? Or how do you think, you know, this is portrayed? And I don't want this to necessarily be how I'm recognized in the whiskey industry by any means. I will always have an open eye as to how things are done with regards to advertising or with regards to, you know, the way a whiskey promotes itself. I've learned a lot from Alwyn Gwilt, who lives in London, and she and I both kind of have the feeling that whiskey should just be gender neutral. It's not about being a woman or about being a man. It's about being a person who enjoys drinking whiskey, and there's no such thing as a feminine whiskey. There's no such thing as a masculine whiskey. So there really shouldn't be, you know, that sort of persona attached in any way or form. Like, we, you know, I'm trying to come around to that idea, and I more and more I believe that idea that, you know, when I'm talking about a whiskey, I don't want to say because it's a Lowland it's feminine, or I don't want to say because it's a bourbon it's got that masculine leathery, you know. So I think it's for me, it's just kind of keeping that awareness in the back of my mind. And yes, I will be watching Doers, especially for the next ad campaign, to see if they've you know, learned anything from this particular lesson.
As she mentioned, Doers pulled the Meet the Baron video off the internet within 24 hours after the social media-fueled protest began. In a statement after the Discus ruling, Doers and its parent company Bacardi said they value consumer feedback, critical or complimentary, and embrace their responsibility to consumers, the Discus Code, and to the industry. Also, I need to make a correction to my story in last week's episode. I said that the New York-based Opperman Weiss ad agency created the Meet the Baron ad. While Opperman Weiss created the other Doers ads in the Drinking Man series, the Meet the Baron video was created by the Montreal-based Sid Lee agency. In other news, Scotch whiskey producers are investing more than $3 billion to increase production capacity, but outgoing Scotch Whiskey Association Chief Executive Gavin Hewitt called that just a good start. Hewitt told the Scotsman that projected demand between now and 2030 will likely soak up all of that increased capacity and then some. He called on distillers to be even more bullish with their investments. Hewitt is stepping down at the end of the month. He's being replaced by former British diplomat David Frost. Meanwhile, the association is calling on UK Chancellor George Osborne to scrap the automatic annual increase in alcohol taxes. The UK's taxes on a bottle of Scotch whiskey have risen by 44% over the last 5 years, as the escalator raises them by 2% over and above the rate of inflation each year. Scotch whiskey sales in the UK have fallen by 12% over the same 5 years. Osborne scrapped the escalator rule for beer in this year's budget and lowered taxes on beer as well. The SWA says it's not fair to whiskey consumers and producers to make the taxes on a dram 50% higher than they are for a pint of beer. Jim Beam will be addressing the one hole in its bourbon lineup starting in March with the release of Jim Beam Single Barrel. It's the first time that a single-barrel bourbon has been sold under the Jim Beam label, and Beam's Fred Noe told me it'll sell for about $35 a bottle.
We're trying to premiumize the Jim Beam name, you know, with Jim Beam single barrel. You know, and if we did the Knob Creek single barrel, had pretty good success with it. So we thought we would extend it to the Jim Beam label as well.
Now, what makes this one unique and different from the standard Jim Beams in terms of taste? What's this one going to be like?
We're aging it longer, and we're bottling it at a higher proof. We're bottling it at 95 proof as opposed to 80. And we're picking barrels from the outer edges of the rack house, where the regular Jim Beam, we do that vertical cross-section from high metal and low storage barrels. You know, when we do these single barrel selections, we're picking barrels from higher storage areas, lower, and then bottling them from those areas. So you're getting some variation. That's the key, you know, is to get a little bit of variation with a single barrel.
Now, what I thought was unusual is also that you guys are going to let people that come down to Claremont to the Stillhouse pick some things out too, right?
Yep. That's the plan down the road, is to let folks come, whether they're retailers or even a private individual, if they choose to come, you know, pick their own barrel. And we'll have the barrels out, and you can, you know, physically sample the barrels, and we'll bottle it for them.
Now, if you don't need a full barrel of whiskey, the distillery will start letting visitors hand-fill a single bottle of the single barrel starting in February. That's been an option with the Knob Creek single barrel on distillery tours for the last few months. It's been almost a year since we met Shane Frazier of Wolfburn Distillery in the northern Scottish Highlands. Got word this week that Shane and Ian Kerr, the two-man team that runs Wolfburn, managed to beat their production goals for the year by 7,000 liters. They produced 190,000 liters of new make, enough to fill 811 casks, and they'll be firing up the stills again after the holidays. You can hear my interview with Shane in episode 410 of Whiskey Cast in the archives at whiskeycast.com. Now, a couple of hours south of Wolfburn, the folks at Bal Blair have released three more vintages from 1983, 1990, and 2003. The Macallan is releasing the fifth edition in its Six Pillars series of Lalique decanters. This one is a 62-year-old 1950 vintage that honors the Easter Elgee's mansion at Macallan. The spiritual home bottling sells for around $26,000 a bottle. Diageo is releasing the first two of five planned special bottlings for its Friends of the Classic Malts affinity group. The Talisker and Royal Lochnagar expressions are available now, and three more distilleries will be announced after the first of the year. The bottlings are only available to Friends of the Classic Malts members through online retailers in the UK, Germany, and Switzerland, and to any member visiting one of the Classic Malts distilleries. Also, Diageo has hired away Georgie Bell from the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society to become the first global ambassador for Mortlach. As we reported earlier this month, Mortlach will go on sale starting in July. Other moves involving brand ambassadors of note, Morrison Beaumont is shifting some of its staff now that the company has offices in New York and Asia. Maltmaster Ian McCallum will be based out of New York City starting in 2014, while Gordon Dundas will be moving from Scotland to Taipei to cover the Asia-Pacific region. And finally, there's been an online Twitter tasting and scavenger hunt / trivia contest the last couple of weeks focusing on Canadian whiskeys, and our good friend Davin DeKergamo's book, Canadian Whiskey, The Portable Expert. Graham McKenney is one of the organizers and has a bonus question for the scavenger hunt, too.
The contest and Twitter tasting, it was a way to, A, promote Davin's book and an overall general understanding of Canadian whiskey. You know, so often some of the other major whiskey producers like Scotland, the U.S., et cetera, I won't say hog the limelight, but we tend to be sort of a quiet cousin to the north, so a lot of people don't know about Canadian whiskey. So this was a great opportunity to sort of to promote a further understanding. So what we did was Davin organized getting books into the hands of the participants, and we helped with getting whiskey samples out to participants to do a Twitter tasting. There's four whiskey samples that went out to people. And then as something different, we decided to include a wider group. We decided to have a scavenger hunt, or like a quiz contest slash scavenger hunt. So during the Twitter tasting, we sort of tweeted out questions or clues, and people were to make note of them, answer them according to what they found in Davin's book, and then next week they're going to submit all of their answers for the questions, and we'll be either picking the person who has the most right answers, or if there's a tie, doing a draw for a basically a Canadian whiskey prize pack, which is going to have a series of rare, relatively rare anyways, Canadian whiskey samples, as well as some kitschy Canadiana, like a toque and maple syrup and that sort of thing, but as well as a Canadian Glencairn whiskey glass as well. So.
And of course, you're going to throw a hockey puck in there too, right?
Of course. Yeah, you can't have a Canadian whiskey basket without a hockey puck in there. The only problem is we have to figure out what team we're going to have on the puck. That may
the Canadian Olympic team, of course.
Perfect. That's great.
So you have the bonus question for us now for the scavenger hunt, right?
That's correct. The bonus question for the Davin TT2 scavenger hunt is, yeast consumes sugar and produces carbon dioxide, alcohol, and an array of congeners. Why is yeast not actually an ingredient in whiskey?
And Davin TT2 is the hashtag people should use to answer it, right?
That's correct, yeah. And so the answer to this bonus question can be found in Davin's book, Canadian Whiskey, the Portable Expert.
I'll have the answer to the bonus question on the next episode of Whiskey Cast. In the meantime, you can keep up with the latest whiskey news all week long at WhiskeyCast.com.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie, continuing the Caskmasters project. You've helped us choose the whiskey, and you've helped us choose the name. Next, help us choose the packaging. Sign up online at glenmorangie.com.
The December episode of WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings is now online. Our holiday tasting panel of Colton Smith, Sean McMillan, and Chris Killalay gathered this week to taste three Irish whiskeys, Powers Gold Label, Writer's Tears, and the Napaug Castle 16-year-old Twinwood. WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings is sponsored by 40 Creek Canadian Whiskey. You can listen at WhiskeyCast.com or download it from iTunes. And before we go any further, I want to take a minute to wish you a very Merry Christmas and the best for 2014 from our entire family. My wife, Christina, our daughters, Brianna and Tessa, along with Aria, Colton, and our grandson, Hunter, and the sheepdogs, Frizzle and Bristow. Got a lot of Christmas cards this week, but the one that made me laugh the most came from the folks at Gordon and McPhail with their own unique take on the 12 days of Christmas. With apologies to those with sensitive ears and the rest of the world, just one stanza. On the 12th day of Christmas, my true love gave to me 12 bottles pouring, 11,000 liters worth of brewing, 10 years maturing, 9 casks a rolling, 8 crows a crowing, 7 barrels a hooping, 6 sours distilling, 5 golden drams, 4 wooden washbacks, 3 wise men, 2 copper stills, and a great big red chimney. I promise to never, ever do that again. Hopefully, you have a much better singing voice than I do, and this week's Your Voice is brought to you by Johnny Walker. Got a question from Matt Rosenfeld the other day about the Van Winkle bourbons. Here's what he had to say. I was able to get a bottle of Old Rip Van Winkle 10-year, 107 proof, today. My question is, why are the 10- and 12-year-old Van Winkles not technically Pappy Van Winkle? Is the mash bill of the 10-year the same as the 15-year? I've been looking online for hours and can't find an answer. Thanks. Well, I got in touch with Preston Van Winkle to get the answer straight from the source. Here's what he had to say. The 10- and 12-year-old Van Winkles were the original Van Winkle releases. They came out well before Julian Winkle III, Preston's dad, created the Pappy Van Winkle line. However, they all used the same mash bill, butter bottled at different ages and proof strengths. Also, the Lot B Van Winkles that you may see from time to time were originally intended to be the second in a series, following the original set of Lot A barrels. However, that Lot B name stuck with retailers and some state alcohol boards in their catalogs, and Julian wound up leaving it that way. David Fenkel chimed in with a comment on the Dewar's ad story. Here's what he posted on our Facebook page. You can love or hate the Dewar's ads. All I know is I'm changing my name to Angus. Now, Angus is the unseen character in the other Dewar's TV ads that actress Claire Forlani appears in. She also appeared in the Meet the Baron ad in what Dewar's described in its original statement as the, quote, strong and successful female icon spokesperson for the brand. If you have a comment, a question, or something you'd like to share with whiskey lovers around the world, you can always post it on the Your Voice page at whiskeycast.com, or you can email me directly. My address is comments@whiskeycast.com. This week's Your Voice is brought to you by Johnny Walker, on the web at johnnywalker.com. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. And by the way, there'll be a Laphroaig tasting at Villa Cantor in Limburg, Germany, this coming Friday night. The Scotch Whiskey Experience in Edinburgh will host its annual Distillers' Fair this coming weekend. The Brandy Library in New York City has a spirit school class on Japanese whiskeys January 7th, along with a 200 Years of Scotch Whiskey class on the 11th. The Tromso Whiskey Festival is also on the 11th in Tromso, Norway. Alberta will have whiskey festivals to benefit the Multiple Sclerosis Society on January 14th in Calgary and on the 15th in Edmonton. And the Victoria Whiskey Festival is the 16th through the 19th in Victoria, British Columbia. We'll have special coverage from Victoria again this year on WhiskeyCast. There are more than 250 different events on the calendar at WhiskeyCast.com, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig. Take a virtual distillery tour at Laphroaig.com, and while you're there, become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Islay.
WhiskeyCast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Kevin O'Gorman, master of maturation, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
It's the combination of two barrels together that impart a lot of the flavour for the red breast. You have the Oloroso sherry imparts a sort of a sherry note, a nice sweet note to the red breast. And then on the other side, you have the American barrel, which gives lovely toasted wood, a sort of vanilla, a bit of sweetness. And really, it's about combining these two casts together that make up the red breast that produces such a fantastic whiskey.
Red breast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know, no Redbreast.
Belgian beers have been prized for centuries, but it's only been about 9 years since the first Belgian whiskey distillery opened. The Owl Distillery opened in 2004 near Liège, with the first whiskey going on sale in 2007. Earlier this year, the Owl's Etienne Bouillon released what may well be one of the strongest whiskeys ever, a 5-year-old malt bottled at 76.1% ABV. We talked via Skype for this week's WhiskeyCast in depth.
The story is that when I distill, I am always going to fill the cask at the strength of the distillation. And usually I am around 70 degrees of alcohol, 70 proof, 70 degrees of alcohol. And then I have a warehouse which is dry. And when you have a warehouse which is dry, you have more water that goes away than alcohol. And so you are going to see the degree of alcohol going up in place of going down if you would have a wet, I would say not a wet, but a quite wet warehouse. So usually the degree goes down when you age a cask of whiskey. But if your warehouse is dry, you are going to lose more water than alcohol, and so the degree is going to go up a little bit.
But in this case, it went up a whole 6 points, right?
Yeah. But the warehouse in which we have our cask is very dry.
Now, that's very similar in some ways to the Kentucky paradox, because the whiskeys in Kentucky, the bourbons there, generally tend to gain strength over time because the water evaporates, but it's also because of the extreme temperature changes. And it, because they have a lot of humidity there, so they get the temperature shifts. In this case, it's just the humidity being very low because your temperature is relatively consistent, right?
Yeah, that's right. Our temperature is consistent, but the humidity is very low in the warehouse that we have right now.
And the other thing that you're doing, and I want to just sort of clarify this for our listeners, is that since you're not diluting the spirit down before you put it in the barrel, that's what also helps this, because most distillers will take whatever comes off the still and then reduce it down to about 62.5 before they put it in the barrel.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, I have been, when I started to distill to make, in order to make my single malt whiskey, the Belgian Ale, I was invited by Jim McEwan to go to work with him. Jim McEwan is the distiller of Bruichladdich at that time, was the distiller of Bruichladdich, but he still is. And he was the former manager of Bowmore. And when I started with him, I did agree to the fact that I thought that it, I think it's more, it's going to give a better result if you set at the degree of the distillation, the alcohol, the spirit during the aging, because I think it's going to improve a little bit the exchange between the cask and the spirit.
Now, how did you get started? Because I know you've been distilling for over 9 years now, and you sort of flew under the radar for those first few years, right?
In fact, I started to distill in 1993, but I was not distilling for the whiskey. I was distilling more fruits distillation with my first distillery. And then I started to distill for the whiskey in 2004. With a society that was completely dedicated to the single malt whiskey creation.
And let's explain how you have expanded over the years, because you actually have some stills that have a unique Scottish heritage now too, right?
That's right. It's really a chance, because when I wanted to change from the stills of 500 liters to some stills of a higher capacity, I was in fact looking for stills of a capacity of 2,000 or 3,000 liters, because, and most of all, I was looking for a second-hand pair of stills. But it's almost you cannot find it in Scotland, because you can always repair a still. So I was I had the idea to buy two new stills. And then Jim McEwan called me. It was, I think, two years and a half ago, just to explain me that he found two stills, and that they were second-hand still, and that they were available if I wanted it. And, of course, I did want those stills. And, in fact, they came from the ex-Caperdonic distillery, which is now closed, and the building has been destroyed by the new owner of the ground. And the new owner of the ground is Richard Forsyth.
Of Forsyth of Rothes, the legendary steelmaking company. So essentially, you could have bought two new stills from Forsyth's, but you wound up buying the old stills, right?
Yeah, that's right, because I have had that opportunity. And for me, it's always, I have always in my mind to work with, I enjoy more to work with some stills that have an history.
Tell me how you started making whiskey in the first place. As you said, you were distilling other things since 1993, but what prompted you to get into whiskey?
Well, in fact, as a distiller, I was looking for the best appellation of alcohol that would give me the opportunity to show the quality of the ground and the quality of the work of the farmer in the surroundings of the distillery. And when I have looked at every appellation of alcohol, I have decided to work, to distill and to create a single malt whiskey, because it's one of the purest alcohol, and the one that is going to reveal the quality of the ground and the quality of the area for the best, because you cannot add anything. So to make a single malt whiskey, you just need water and barley that you are going to malt. But these are the two and only ingredients in order to make a single malt whiskey. So you cannot add anything. You cannot try to do something else. That just you. The only fact that you need to go is to go with the nature and to transform, to help the nature during its transformation. So you put the barley in the ground, and then you do the harvest. You go with the nature, you do the malting, then you make a grist, of course. You do a mash in order to free the sugar. Then you make a fermentation in order to create the alcohol. Then you distill in order to capture the alcohol and the flavors that appeared during the fermentation. And then you have the choice of the cask, of course, which is very, very important. But then you cannot do anything else. You have done your best. Of course, you give your own touch when you take the heart of the distillate. But except that, you have just gone with the transformation of the nature. And the result shows, for me, the quality of the ground on which the barley was raised and everything that has been with. So I am speaking of the aging, of the choice of the cask, of choosing also the art of the distillation and everything. But the first point of everything is the quality of the ground.
And the area of Belgium that you're in is known as very fertile farmland, right?
Yeah, that's right. In fact, we are between three rivers. I'm going to say those words in French because I don't think there is a translation in English. So the three rivers are La Meuse, La Meuse, and Le Gers. And that makes the delimitation in geography, but also a geological delimitation for the specificity of the ground. And for me, I think it's one point which is very important for the quality of the future whiskey, is it's that the ground is of a very high quality.
Tell me about the climate as well, because as you point out, you have a very dry warehouse, but that's not your only warehouse, and it's not your only whiskey. It's not a 76%, or
no,
it's more conventional whiskeys too, right?
Yeah, usually I'm going to reduce the whiskey at 46 degrees of alcohol. And so I'm not going to make a chill filtration. It will be without any chill filtration. And I'm also going I'm always going to leave my whiskey without any coloring. So the color that you are going with the Belgian oil is the natural color that the whiskey takes during the aging.
Your whiskeys are basically available only in Belgium right now, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. In fact, I have made my idea was to make a Belgian single malt whiskey with Belgian ingredients, barley and water, and for Belgian people if they wanted it, and in fact they want it. So 95% of my production is now sold in Belgium. I have a very small part of my production that is left. I would say more for testing outside of Belgium. For example, for the United States, I have a few hundred bottles that are available, not in 50 centiliters, but in 75 centiliters, as my importer has chosen it. And my importer is Be United, Mr. Matthias Niedart, and he's distributing it in the United States.
With the new stills from Capradonic, you're going to be able to actually expand this capacity over the next several years now, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And will you do more exporting through Europe, or what are your plan to make the whiskies available after that?
Well, first, I want to because right now, as you said it, every time I do a bottling, it's bought in Belgium mostly. And so first I would like to have enough to satisfy the people in Belgium that want to try my single malt whiskey. But then, of course, our goal is to make it available in a few states, as in United States, in Canada, in France, which is on our side, and in Germany, in Luxembourg, and also in Japan. So we'll have a few states in which it will be possible in the future to test and to find a bottle of the Belgian Owl.
I have a feeling that that may be a difficult proposition, since you've said your goal is to try to satisfy the demand in Belgium. My experience with the Belgian market, albeit limited, is that Belgians are really crazy about single malt whiskey and about whiskey in general. What makes the that market so unique? What really drives the passion? Because we know of Belgium for its beers, and your whiskey now is making its mark. But what about whiskey really gets the Belgian whiskey lover going?
In fact, I think that in Belgium we have been used first to some French high-level alcohol as Cognac, Armagnac, Calvados. And it seems that 10, 15, 20 years ago, the single malt whiskey have showed that they had as much, if not more, flavors and aromas that the people who like fine alcohol could like. So I think that's a major reason for which the single malt whiskey, and now a little bit the fine rums, are more well known in Belgium and more appreciated by a lot of people.
I ask this question a lot, but I assume you're having fun with this.
I enjoy it every day. Every time I wake up, it's a lot of fun just to know what I am doing, enjoying as much the creation or the following of the field and the creation of the whiskey during its maturing time, so during the aging. And also, when I am in a period of distilling, I enjoy it a lot. But that's true also that I'm very curious, and I wanted also to give the opportunity to more people to be curious as me. And so I do bottling even of the spirit when it's not yet the whiskey. So I'm making bottling with a new spirit, of course. With a new make, and then after 6 months, 1 year, or 2 years, I do bottling like this, so I give the opportunity to more people to understand what's going on during the aging. And because it was always a question that I had, what is a whiskey before that it is a whiskey? And I do my best to give the opportunity to more people to discover and to enjoy the follow-up of a whiskey in creation.
You'll find a link to the Owl Distillery's website on the World Whiskies page in the resources section at whiskeycast.com. And that's this week's WhiskeyCast In Depth. Let's start off the What I'm Tasting This Week department with Etienne's Whopper of a Whiskey, the Owl 5-year-old single cask bottled at 76.1% ABV. The nose on my sample was strong and dry, but with no burn and notes of malt, honey, vanilla, nutmeg, and ginger. The taste starts off thick and fruity with plum and raisin notes, and it takes just a few seconds for the explosion of chili pepper spice. It fades out slowly, the mouthfeel becomes very dry with dried peaches and apricots, and those notes linger through the very long finish. Needless to say, this one is best had with water and in small amounts, but it does have a pretty good balance and complexity for a young and intense whiskey. I'm scoring the Owl's 5-year-old single cask an 83. Next up, one of the whiskeys featured on this month's WhiskeyCast virtual tastings, the Naphog Castle Twinwood 16-year-old Irish single malt, was finished in sherry casks and bottled in 2012 at 40% ABV. The nose on my sample had mild allspice and clove notes, dried apricots and figs, and just a touch of oak. The taste is velvety and fruity with orange peel, peaches, apricots, and hints of raisins and honey. And the finish lingers with those same fruity notes and a hint of spices. I'm scoring the Napaug Castle Twinwood 16-year-old an 86. Last time around, I mentioned Rocktown Distillery's Arkansas Rye Whiskey, which uses grain grown near the distillery in Little Rock. It's bottled at 46% ABV. The nose reminds me at first of a swimming pool, along with touches of clove, allspice, toasted bagels, and graham cracker pie crust. There's also a touch of rubberiness, but it is a nose that grows on you. The taste is spicy with cinnamon and chili powder notes that dominate at first, but fade to reveal peaches and pears in the background. The finish has those same lingering spicy and fruity notes, and adding a little bit of water does open it up and improve the complexity. I'm scoring Rocktown's Arkansas Rye an 82. I've added these tasting notes to the searchable list of 1,100 different whiskeys at WhiskeyCast.com. That's also where you'll find WhiskeyCast HD and WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings episodes, our news updates and the calendar of events, and a complete archive of past episodes. You can follow me on Facebook and Twitter at WhiskeyCast, and my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the Stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2013, and comes to you each week from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Happy holidays, and thanks for listening.